appreciate you being here today. I know many of you are here expecting David to preach in my stead. I appreciate him stepping in on short notice last week. Many of you had been praying for years that I would lose my voice, and the prayer of a righteous man avails much. And so there we were last week. But thank you so much to David for jumping in. And he was even prepared to go again today, but I think it was going to be about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches today if we had to go a second time. If at some point in the lesson I have a coughing fit, that'll be fine. It'll be over in 5 or 10 minutes. Talk amongst yourselves during that time, but we'll muddle through. The last week of Jesus' life was filled with highs and lows. And I have to think that one of the real lows was just the running battle, the constant, relentless conflict with the religious leaders. That just had to be among the lows for him. It was like no place could he go without these guys being on his case. In short order, after he clears out the temple, the religious leaders confront him about that. You know, the typical questions you'd expect. What gives you the right? Who died and left you in charge? How dare you do this? And it's really interesting that it's right after that that Jesus is going to tell an interesting story that we're going to look at today. But you know, there's nothing new about that. There's absolutely nothing new about the folks that are kind of the gatekeepers, the folks that are in charge of the thou shalt nots, want to kind of make sure we all know our place. It happens today. It happens in our lifetime. I had a preacher friend who was in a galaxy far, far away, long, long ago, but in a church where, through his preaching and teaching and ways he was involved in that community, that church began to grow and began to reach people that had not been reached before for Christ. And yet he was, came to be a situation where he needed to be looking for employment elsewhere because the powers that be in that church didn't like the kind of people that were being brought in. Not our people. Not the kind of folks we want around here. A few years ago, when I was in Oxford, where I was before I came here, we started, I say allow, and that sounds so paternalistic. An AA group began meeting in our building on a night, and we sort of kind of rearranged some things in our schedule so that they could meet, because the whole idea of Alcoholics Anonymous, the whole idea of they would have a part of our building to themselves, not, you know, thinking other folks would come in and kind of take role and see who was there and that sort of thing. And I remember well two phone calls I received from two sisters in the congregation, strongly objecting to that. And I'll never forget the wording one of them had: "We do not want those people in our building." You know, it still happens. It still happens that you get the gatekeepers that want to say, "Jesus, you're attracting the wrong people." We don't like that. They didn't like it when he did it. But he tells this story right after those folks come up to him and say, "Hey, well, how dare you? How dare you say that the temple is supposed to be a place for all people to come pray? How dare you say that?" So Matthew 21:28-32, he says, "What do you think? A man had two sons. He went to the first and said, 'Son, go and work in the vineyard today.' He answered, 'I will not.' But later he changed his mind and went. The father went to the second and said the same. And he answered, 'I go, sir.' But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of the father?" And they said, "The first." Jesus said to them, "Well, truly I tell you, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are going into the kingdom of God ahead of you. For John came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him, but the tax collectors and the prostitutes believed him. And even after you saw it, you did not change your minds and believe him." Oh, that Jesus tells a story. Which of the two did the will of the Father? And then you better get ready for the boom. Boom. He lays it right on them. You know, at this point, you'd think that Jesus would just drop the mic and walk away, but for good measure, he tells them another story, this one about the servants who run the vineyard of an owner who keeps sending folks to collect the rent, but they keep dissing the owner's representatives. And he finally sends his son, and the tenants kill him. Wait a minute, I think I'm beginning to recognize a plot here. And Jesus' application of that story, according to Matthew 21:43, says, "Therefore, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people that produces the fruit of the kingdom." And then we have this great line just a couple of verses later. When the chief priests and the Pharisees heard these parables, they realized that he was speaking about them. You got to give them this. They're quick, you know. It only takes a couple of really sharp pointed stories, a couple of really sharp pointed applications, and these guys get it. I don't think Matthew records this story of the two sons just for us to appreciate Jesus' ability to stick it to his opponents. For what it's worth, I've come to believe that what in the past I thought was that Jesus had just written these guys off, that Jesus had just written them off, and maybe I thought that because that's what I would do. That's what I would do. Not necessarily because that's what Jesus is doing. I've come to believe that even at this point, if perhaps even at the point a couple of chapters later in Matthew 23 where Jesus forever associates the word hypocrite with being a Pharisee and a scribe, that even at that point, if one or two or all of these guys had come to him and said, "Hey, I get it now. I get it now. Can I follow you?" I think even at that point, he would have welcomed them with open arms and open heart. So I don't know that he's telling this story just to say, "I've given up on you." And when we treat that story that way, we sort of leave ourselves out of the story. But if we treat this story like I think we should treat all of Jesus' stories, it's going to work on us on several levels. We can't let ourselves off the hook. This story is not recorded only for us to enjoy Jesus wrong-footing his opponents. It's not meant just for us to appreciate the fact that Jesus could one-up his detractors. It's there for us to ponder and consider. As I say, it works on several levels. For one, I think it works on what we might call the integrity level. Quite simply, it's not what you say, it's what you do that counts in the end. You know, cliche alert, be prepared. What's important is not that you talk the talk, but that you walk the walk. I made that up just now. Did you notice that? No, you never. No, we know that. We've heard that before. We know that, but integrity is actually doing it. Integrity is actually walking the walk. You know, that's such an important lesson, a lesson we especially need to learn in our social media posturing age. I agree with Kyle Idleman that eventually we're all going to have shirts that say, "One day I'm going to live the life I portray myself as living on Facebook." You know, because we just have this, we're just so used to posturing. It's just who we are now. The problem is too many Christ followers talk about following Christ, but when it comes to it, what would Jesus do or what would Jesus have me do is not just a question we want to really be bothered with. Not a question we really want to put too much time into thinking about. And I think this story won't let us off that hook. Because even Jesus' enemies can figure out the one that actually did the will of the Father was the one that did the will of the Father. Won't let us off the hook on the integrity level. For another, it works on what we might call the geography level. That's where you end up in relationship to God that matters. So, okay, we're not talking geography as geography on a map, but geography in terms of where you are in relationship to God. You see, the first son started in a bad place. "I will not, not me, not going to do it. Don't tell me what to do," but ends up actually doing it. He ends up in an obedient place. a good place. He ends up doing the will of his father. And it reminds us that you don't know where someone might end up. And yet, how often do we judge other people? How often, let's read that the way it ought to be read. How often do we feel justified in treating people badly just because we think we're pretty sure they're far away from God and will not ever be any closer? Let me say it again. You don't know where someone might end up. Well, no, that's not right. Come to think of it, we can pretty much know where someone's going to end up, because if you, as a Christ follower, or if I, as a Christ follower, treat that person badly, and especially if we find a way to make sure they know that we're representing God in our opinion of them, then then maybe you can know where they'll end up in relationship to God, because you'll just push them farther away. I wonder what would happen, and we've said this before, so say it again. Maybe even I'll listen to it this time. What would happen if we treated people that we meet that we know are outside of Christ not as non-Christians, but as pre-Christians, as people who might be on a journey and might actually be moving in God's direction just a little bit and could use some encouragement from us? What if we started treating people who are outside of Christ as pre-Christian? What kind of a difference might that make? You don't know where someone might end up. You don't know where someone, even you, might end up. You may be here this morning feeling very far away from God. May feel like you don't belong here. I just want to let you know you're exactly where you need to be. But you may not feel like you're very, very close to God, that instead you're very far away. You may feel that you've messed up too much. You may feel like you've said no to his will too often. But please hear this story of Jesus saying to you, look, it's not how far away you've been. It's not even how far away you are right at this moment. It's where you end up. So why not start heading my way today? Why not start moving in my direction today? It's not where you start. It's where you end up. And third, I think this story might also work on what we might call the love level. You say, whoa, wait a minute, Greg. This can't be about love on any level. It doesn't say anything about how these boys feel. It doesn't say anything about how they're feeling. Aha. Aha. Once again, we're exposing our commitment to the fact that love is a feeling. Love's not a feeling. Here's one way it works on the love level. Ask yourself this question: which of these sons loved the father? Which of these two sons loved the father? I'm not talking about feelings, not even talking about intentions, because maybe the second son had good intentions. Oh, yeah, I'll go. I'll do what you want me to do. But for whatever reason, those intentions did not play out. But we're not talking about feelings or intentions. We're talking about loving action. Which son loved the father? In other words, which son actually did what the father asked him to do? Here's another way it works on the love level if we pay close attention to that first son. Love takes a second thought. See, you know, that when we write people off because we think they're far away from God, that's usually our first thought. That's our, you know, they're not close to God. They're not ever going to be close to God. And we don't even give it a second thought. Love takes a second thought. See, this second son apparently took a thought about it. This first son, rather. Love is when you do the right thing for someone, when you realize, perhaps after some thought, what the right thing to do is. See, I don't know. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because I don't want to be alone. But I don't know how many of you sometimes realize what the best thing to do in a situation is after the moment has passed. A couple of years ago at Elderlink, Randy Harris told a story about himself, and because this is stuff like this has never happened to me, I'll tell it about him. That he was in a fast food restaurant and was not getting the service that he deserves. And aren't we all that way? You know, not getting the service that he believed he deserved, and reacted a little harshly to one of the workers there. Kind of took it out on that worker. It was obvious that the place was understaffed. They were having some trouble, but that did not stop Randy at that moment, and he took it out on the person. He was with someone else. They go out and get in the car, and the guy goes, "Wow, that's a side of you I'm not used to seeing." And apparently, they kind of drive around the place while Randy thinks, and he pulls in the parking lot, pulls in a parking space, goes back in, finds the guy and says, "Look, a few minutes ago, there was a guy that looks a lot like me, a crazy guy. And I'm not proud of the way he treated you. What can I do to help?" That's a loving action. It takes that second thought sometimes for us to go, I blew that. And yet, 10 times out of 9, most of us go, "Well, move on to the next." But Jesus' story has the first son go, "I'm not going to do it. No way, Dad. Not going to do it. I probably should do what he asked me to do." I wonder how many times that's where we should be. You know, maybe it's true that you only have one chance to make a good first impression, but it's even more true that it's never too late to try to do the right thing, the loving thing. Especially when Jesus is our master and his father is our father. Now, I don't know which one of these levels is the one you need to hear this morning. I don't know which one of these levels is working on you this morning. If it's the integrity level, I need to be someone who does what I say I'm going to do. I need to be someone who doesn't just talk about being a Christ follower, but actually follows Christ, does what he would do. I don't know if it's the geographic level of, you know what, I feel very far away from God, but you know what, I'm hearing in this story the message that that doesn't matter right now, that I can still move in the direction of the Father. Or maybe it's this love level. Maybe I need to start taking a second thought. Maybe I need to realize it's never too late to do the right thing, to do the loving thing. I don't know which level might be working on you this morning, which one you need to think about. I'm going to give you about 10 seconds. I'd like for you to take a pen or a pencil or something, but there on page 4 of the bulletin, to just write that down. Which level of this is the one you need to think about some more? Which level of is working on you this morning? Because I'm guaranteeing you, if we're hearing Jesus' word as word of Jesus and not just Greg's raspy voice rasping through it, that it's working on us on some level. Give you 10 seconds to write down, where's Jesus grabbing your attention in this story this morning? Whichever level it is, my guess is each of us will have at least one opportunity, if not many opportunities this week, to decide which child of the Father we're going to be. Are we going to be that first one that ends up loving the Father by doing the right thing, even if it takes us a second thought? Are we going to be that second son that says, "Oh, absolutely, on your side, God, tell me what to do, I'll do it," and have absolutely no intention of doing it? We'll have that opportunity. We'll probably have lots of opportunities this week. I challenge you to be the son, the daughter, that does the Father's will.